People have no idea what's coming.
Ich lasse mich gern überraschen.
Du kannst das Beste nicht sagen.
Und hier schlägt ein!
Wow, I love it.
So kann es gerne weitergehen.
This is gonna be good.
The NHL season is almost upon us, and for that reason, it is a gimme, it is a given, it is a certainty that one person has to return on Hockey O'Clock, and it is none other than Austria's favorite National Hockey League pundit, as I called it in the invitation. It's no other than former NHL head coach and GM Tom Rowe. And coach, so thankful that you're returning for another season of talking about the National Hockey League for Austrian fans. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, no problem. Love it. And it's always good talking with you. And it's always good to be able to stay in touch with people in Austria.
Coach, it's been quite some time since you last graced the podcast with your appearance. What's life been in South Carolina for you?
Well, life's been good. Obviously, in South Carolina, we have a lot of golf courses. Weather's unbelievable. I live right down the street from a beach. My grandkids are here, so my wife and I keep busy with beach and taking care of our grandkids, and I'm at the golf course quite a bit. That's at least until another coaching job comes along.
Very glad to hear that you're enjoying life, but as regards other coaching opportunities, how involved have you been in the business? How many serious offers have there been?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely had offers. I've had, you know, three offers that were serious, two offers, and then another one that was fairly serious, but just, I didn't think it was a good fit. And, you know, I'm not looking to hit it out of the ballpark when it comes to salary, but just to be totally honest, I just think fair market value is where it should be. And I just want to make sure that I can go someplace like I did in Linz. You know, you and I have talked about Linz at length. It was just such a great fit there with Christian Perthala and the players. The players absolutely made it unbelievable for me as a coach. So I'm looking for something similar to that. And if the right opportunity comes along, then I'll jump at it. And I guess I'm at the point in my life, if it isn't the right opportunity and I don't think I can build something with the general manager for whatever particular team, then you know what, I'll continue to be patient and wait.
Now, we were talking about it the other day, it seems. It's been a couple of months, but your day revolves around, obviously, family, golf, and a lot of hockey. How many hockey leagues and basically all the European leagues have started now are you currently following? Where are job offers or potential job opportunities coming from?
Yeah, I mean, the leagues that I follow literally daily and watch video on a couple of games in each league. Maybe I don't watch them from beginning to end, but I definitely watch video on the system I use are obviously the Ice Age in Austria. I just had such an unbelievably positive experience in that league. You know, I watch that very close, watch the DEL closely because I know a lot of the players and coaches in that league. And then obviously the NLA in Switzerland and the NLB in Switzerland are the primary four leagues that I'm watching closely and staying on top of in case anything comes about in any of those leagues. But, you know, I've got a fondness for Austria. I love the country, love the people I met there. And, you know, if the right opportunity came in there, I wouldn't hesitate to go back.
Now, if one had to look for the lowest common denominator of those four leagues you mentioned, it would probably be the language German that's spoken in most of them or large parts of them. How's your German coming along?
Not very good. I figure at 65 years old, I'll just stick with the English. And, you know, it's funny, on the golf course the other day with a couple of buddies of mine, we got talking about that. And we were saying how people in the United States and North America in general, you know, really only use one language, where the Europeans have, you know, skills to use three or four languages, which has always impressed everybody in our country. And, but I don't know, call it laziness, arrogance, ignorance, whatever you want to call it over here. with English being the common language around the world, you know, I think it makes us pretty lazy and we don't really get too aggressive on learning another language.
First of all, I wouldn't call it neither laziness nor anything else. And if you ever return to German speaking realms, I'll be happy to help getting you up to speed as regards your German speaking. But the great thing, and that's the main reason why I was able to bring you back on, is hockey season is almost upon us as regards the National Hockey League. How excited are you for the upcoming campaign?
I love hockey in general, but watching how the National Hockey League is getting so much younger and so much more skilled and faster. And that's what I love to see. I like to see what new systems are put in place. I like to follow coaches, different coaching styles, obviously. You know, there's a good percentage of coaches now starting to, you know, be structured, but not overly structured. And Joel Quenneville comes to mind. He did a great job in Florida, Gerard Gallant. Well, I think Jeremy Colleton in Chicago. I mean, they have systems, but they're not strangling the players with systems where they can't make plays. And at the end of the day, you got to let the players be creative. That's what the fans want to see. So that's what I'm excited to watch when the season first starts and see how many young guys make the NHL rosters and see what they can actually do once they get into meaningful games. Exhibition games, I don't put a lot of stock in because you're not playing against NHL rosters for the most part. But once the real stuff starts to happen and the real bullets start flying around, then it's fun to watch and see what young kids can do and how faster the leagues get. Because every year it seems to be getting faster and more skilled.
Now, it seems just like it happened a couple of days ago when the Tampa Bay Lightning hoisted the Stanley Cup in their home arena, hoisting it for a second straight year, which happened in July. This is considered probably to be one of the shortest off seasons in the history of the game. How did you follow the frenzy that unfolded the past couple of months?
Yeah, I mean, I followed it, but did not like it would be. I didn't really think a lot was going to happen, not like it does in normal free agency off seasons, just because the season was so short. You still have the pandemic at a pretty high level with cases. And I think teams are just going to be a little wiser with their money. And there's still a lot of money spent. I mean, it just seems like money's always there. But I think teams now are wising up a little bit. And I know when I was in Florida, we talked extensively about not getting sucked in on the first day of training camp or first day of free agency. Let the craziness go by and see what becomes available, because you make a lot of mistakes. And history has proven that a lot of the big time free agents don't go to their new team and make a huge difference. Maybe once in a while, but at the end of the day, you still have to develop your own draft picks. You got to make wise trades. And that's how I think you can build teams for the future. Going after big time free agents, spending a boatload of money, I don't think is the wisest way to do things.
Then again, each and every year, there are some free agents who might be worth one's money. If you were on a GM seat or if you were on a head coaching seat, how would you have approached the off season, knowing on July 7th the season ended? And was there a player who you'd like to have targeted? Was there a player who you'd have on your radar if you were still a head coach or GM?
Yeah, well, I think from the coaching standpoint, and you saw a lot of, I think there was a lot of teams interested in him, but Edmonton was the only one who could really to pull it off, was Zach Hyman. That's a guy who's got brains. He's got skill. He competes like crazy. Connor McDavid has even said he wants to get to know him as quickly as possible and get some chemistry going with him. In the first exhibition game, I think McDavid had a goal and two assists. Hyman had a goal and an assist. So that guy was on everybody's radar. Kenny Holland was probably the one guy that could put something together to pull it off and get him signed. I know he kept trying to work out a trade and sign agreement, but at the end of the day, he signed him as a free agent and landed a heck of a player. And Hyman actually was an original Florida Panther draft pick by Dale Tallon and his staff back in the day. So that was a great pick, and he is a quality guy.
Great story, obviously, being a fifth round pick by the Panthers back in the day. He signed a 7-year contract, maxing out at $38.5 million. Good value?
Yeah, I mean, $38 million over 7 years is a lot of money. I mean, who really is worth that? But in the sports world, that's a number that, players are getting. And for what that particular player can do for you, if anybody's worth that kind of money, I would say, yes, he's worth it because he's durable. He plays the same way every single night. I mean, there's not too much fall off in his game. He's not afraid to speak to the media when he's approached in the locker room after tough losses. He's a guy that kind of punches all the holes in a ticket when you're looking for a real solid two-way player. And that's the key. He's a two-way guy. And he can kill penalties. He can play a checking role if you want that. If McDavid, and obviously McDavid is going to get the best line on every single team during the season, Hyman will be the guy that can make the difference because he just grinds it out so much and he's fearless and is in phenomenal shape. So, yeah, I do think that's well worth the money for him.
And he's only 29 years old, so the best years hopefully still ahead for Zach Hyman. But as we enter or getting closer to the regular season, what other takeaways or observations did you make during the off season or now heading into the season?
Well, it's funny, it's a copycat league, like most leagues are in pro sports. And it's funny how everybody, and we did it in Florida, we went mainly skill and speed, even for the fourth line. And I remember talking with Gerard Gallant, he wasn't a fan of it. And I just said, well, listen, we need to make some adjustments because we didn't have four lines to win in the playoffs. So we want to try and build up four solid lines that can play. And that was a few years ago. And at that time, the thinking was that that's the way the league was going. But over time, and Gerard has always stuck to his guns. I think Pete DeBoer is the same way. Barry Trotz in New York's the same way. They all want to have an element of physical players. And that is definitely proven to be a good way to go because, Vegas had a real good run last year, even though they didn't win it, they still were a very tough team to play against. And I know in Vegas, that's the way they built their team. They put more skill in there, but they still have an element. I was a little surprised when Ryan Reeves got traded, but because I thought he was a huge part of that team and gave the guys on that team a lot of freedom. But I think the way the league's going, and if I was an NHL GM now, I definitely would make sure we had an element of toughness. Because when I coach over here, I always like to have that element. I kind of got away from that thinking when analytics really took over, and I still think you need to have three really good skating lines that can score goals and make plays. But that fourth line, that can be where your physical style player can play. And the reason Reeves is so valuable, you can play him. You don't just sit him on the bench and send him out when things get a little silly. He can actually play 10 minutes, 12 minutes. And that's why I followed what the New York Rangers did so closely, just to see what they were going to do to rebuild their team, because over the summer they said they weren't hard enough to play against. So they changed that. They brought in Ryan Reeves. They went out and got Sam Blazy from St. Louis. So they've got an element of grit there now. And that's the way Gerard likes to coach. So that's where that was the one team I paid close attention to, them in Seattle.
You already kind of took it away and went with it, but that would have been my follow-up question. You knowing Gerard Gallant and haven't been able to work with him, would you say there's already a Gallant imprint on the Rangers?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, and Drury, too, because Drury was a hard-nosed guy to play against. He competed like crazy, so it made perfect sense that he went out and got Gerard as his coach. And from day one, Gerard was their number one candidate. I don't think there was anybody else being seriously considered for that job. And Gerard's done a great job. You know, he's going to be a candidate for Coach of the Year this year, I'm sure. And I know the players absolutely love playing for him. I mean, they did in Florida, and that hasn't changed. They did in Vegas. When they fired him in Vegas, there was almost mutiny on the Bounty there. Everybody was so upset, fans and players. But then that's the impact he has on a team. And we screwed up in Florida. You know, me and, you know, Eric Joyce and Steve Waria, who were the two assistant GMs, we didn't listen to him enough. And it was a crazy situation there. We should have, I should have communicated with him a little better than I did. And we should have had a little bit more physical style player in the lineup. And, man, I kick myself in the rear end from time to time, sitting here thinking about it. Because that's the way I always coached. I always liked to have that element myself. And then I kind of got, pulled away from that. But at the end of the day, I do believe you definitely need to have a fourth line of guys who can get up and down the ice and play a physical brand. Because that gets the fans excited, gives you bench energy, and then it protects your skilled guys. You still need to have protection because there is an element of intimidation in the National Hockey League still.
Just if you look at the Pat Maroons, the Tyler Johnsons, the Ross Coltons of this world, who made up Tampa's fourth line, that's probably the all the proof you need to start building your fourth line on a team.
Yeah, and that's a perfect example. I mean, absolutely perfect. And I think the fourth line with the Rangers will obviously be Reeves, Sam Blaze, and I can't remember who the third guy is, but it's gonna be a player that can skate and get up and down the ice, and it will be a pain in the ass to play against. I mean, that fourth line for New York, and so that'll be a team. Hopefully, the Austrian market gets to watch the Rangers this year, because that will be a fun team to watch.
You've already mentioned that he might be one of your candidates for Coach of the Year. We're going to make a rapid-fire round, or have a rapid-fire round of your candidates for most of the NHL awards a little later on this episode. What I wanted to get to you, or to ask you first, is what's your gut feel? Is it a good idea to – obviously, we're still within a global pandemic, but is it a good thing to go back to the old divisions, or did you grow so fond of the all-Canadian division that you would have loved the NHL to stick with the system that they implicated last year?
Yeah, providing that you play everybody in the league. I did like the way they had it set up last year. I love the all-Canadian division. I think that's awesome. I think the fans liked it in Canada. But God willing, there's going to be an 82 game schedule this year, and there won't be any games canceled. But, I think they're starting the league out. Matter of fact, I know they're starting the league out like they did last year. And, but I did like that format. I thought it was pretty cool.
Now there's a new team, the 32nd team that's joined in the National Hockey League. It's the Seattle Kraken. What should we expect from the newest member of the National Hockey League?
Well, you don't have to look far. Just look at Carolina. Ronnie Francis doesn't get enough credit for what he did there, but he built that roster that's so successful today. And I think you're just going to see the same style of player. They'll be their defensemen. And I'll look at just their draft picks from the entry draft this year, amateur entry draft. Mobile guys can move the puck and can skate. And then the same thing with his forwards. Ronnie went out and drafted a lot of skill and speed. He's got some good two-way players in the draft that year, but they're all going to be guys that can play and that think the game well. He's a very meticulous general manager. He doesn't leave any stone unturned, but you can see the Kraken becoming a very fast-paced, puck control, move the puck quickly, then will not be a dump and chase team. Not one, maybe initially they might be, just because of the way the roster's set up now. But I think over time you'll see them play a very similar style to as Carolina. But yeah, that's what Ronnie likes, and that's how he builds his team. What'll be interesting, what we just talked about a couple minutes ago, is if he will bring in a physical element for that fourth line. Will he bring in guys? Because that was the one thing that I thought Carolina got pushed around too much in the beginning of his tenure. They were a little soft. You know, they didn't, you know, once teams started leaning on him and being physical with him, they'd back off a little bit, and that's where you could beat him. It'll be interesting to see if he protects some of those guys with a physical element like a Ryan Reeves, or will he just go the old Detroit Red Wings style and just really bring in four lines of high-end character guys, seven or eight defensemen that just never get intimidated. And we've talked about Alexander Barkov. I'll even bring up a player that I coached in North America, Wayne Simpson, who plays for Ingolstadt. Those are guys who just don't get intimidated. You can run at them all night long. They don't get intimidated. So if you have a team toughness attitude like that, and that's the way the Detroit Red Wings were able to dominate for so many years and win so many cups. Yeah, they had Probert and Joey Koser and those tough guys in the beginning. But as time went on, they got away from that. And they had four lines that could play and beat you on the scoreboard. And if you remember the Anaheim series that Detroit played in, you know, Anaheim tried to beat them up and they could care less. They just fought right through it and they won the series. So it'll be interesting to see how Ronnie goes. Does he bring in a Ryan Reeves type of player, or does he just go after incredibly high character guys that can fight through all the nonsense that happens sometimes?
Knowing that you and Ron Francis obviously know each other, you've had a relationship or a working relationship for quite some time, and knowing what he tried to do with the Kraken so far, was there a move maybe in free agency, maybe in the expansion draft, where you thought typical Ron Francis?
Yeah, the goaltender, Grubauer, and I thought that was genius. I thought that was that came out of nowhere. Nobody even saw that one coming. So that was pretty impressive. I didn't see that, and neither did anybody else in the NHL, because I know, and I haven't talked to Ronnie that much, but he was in a tough position because all the GMs learned from the mistakes they made with Vegas during that expansion draft. And it wasn't as, or I guess there weren't as many moves for Ronnie to make or basically hold other teams hostage, because George McPhee did hold teams hostage. He held some teams hostage, and that's why he was able to put together such an incredible roster. And that's where the pressure is going to come on Seattle, is everybody's thinking about what Las Vegas did. And I'm sure the fans in Seattle and management in Seattle are going to expect, you know, similar results. So that'll be, I don't think they will have, you know, I think they're going to be competitive. I think they're going to be good, but knowing Ronnie's approach, Ronnie's very methodical, and he's a thinking man. And, you know, he could be a very successful businessman in any other business as well. He will, if ownership is patient with him, they will over time get a really good team there, whether they get one right out of the gates, I'm not so sure yet, because they don't have a lot of offense in that lineup to start in October. But Ronnie will build the Stanley Cup contender. Within a five-year period, they'll be very dangerous.
Wow. Big words. And if it happens, that would be sitting well with the Pacific Northwest. Obviously not with the Vancouver Canucks, but that's a whole different story. As we were talking about Grubauer and him coming in in free agency, there was this little thing called the expansion draft, and everybody was looking forward to it. Everybody was curious on who they might settle. As regards all the expansion draft picks that Seattle made, was there one that stood out for you? Was there one where you said, ooh, I would have taken that specific player as well?
Yeah, I mean, not really. It was, I mean, I might get in trouble here when I say this. I just thought it was kind of vanilla ice cream. I didn't get overly excited about anybody. I thought he just put together a solid team that his coaching staff could work with. I thought Alexiak from Dallas gave him some size and strength. But yeah, you know, he's got a good roster, but I guess with the way the game is today, a little thin on offense, and it'll all determine, you know, how they play as a team. Because I think if they have four lines that can play and they're all in sync together, then that'll help. But there's a lot of unknowns because it's a new team in a new city. Mark Giordano, who I had coached in the American Hockey League his rookie year, is without a doubt, I think, the best captain in the National Hockey League. He's an amazing leader. He's an amazing person, about as good a guy as you're ever going to meet in this business. And he will definitely lead them in the right direction. And he knows what it takes to win. So, you know, getting to go back and answer your question, when he did pick up Giordano, I said, great move. Absolutely great move. And it was a risky move because Mark had been with Calgary from day one in his career. So, you know, I'm sure they had conversations on the sidelines, you know, if we pick you up in the draft, are you going to come? You know, and if he says, yeah, I definitely will come, then you got to do it because that's the type of leader he is. And Mark will be a guy, if he wants to go to work for Seattle when his career is over, he'll be that type of guy that the organization is going to want. So go back a little bit on your first question. Yeah, when they picked up Mark Giordano, I said, whoa. I said, that was a great move. I just sit here, I kind of forgot he was even there until it just came back into my mind. So, yeah, that would be the pick that I would have made, because you need to have strong leadership and you need to have a strong locker room, which is what George McPhee did such a phenomenal job with in Vegas. They had unbelievable chemistry.
See, I never want to counter anything that former GM and head coach in the National Hockey League says, but to me, that one pickup that I would have probably gone for and Seattle did was Yanni Gourde. Obviously, coming from a Stanley Cup champion back-to-back, winning a lot of faceoffs, undrafted, so he's got that chip on his shoulder. He's deceptively fast, and he scored a lot. And just all the pieces that I would be looking for in a player, but obviously that's me. But from an offensive standpoint, how would you assess Yanni Gourde being on the Kraken?
Yeah, I mean, Yanni Gourde's a great player, and I loved him on Tampa Bay. But here's where I'll counter that a little bit. Is Yanni Gourde was never counted on to be the big scoring guy in Tampa Bay. You know, he was a support guy, and there are a lot of players like that. So now it's going to be a little different because Yanni Gourde is a very emotional player from watching him on the ice. How is he going to handle the spotlight in Seattle? Because the spotlight's definitely going to be on him. Because one of how he plays, so he's going to draw a lot of attention. He's going to aggravate a lot of teams. When he was in Tampa Bay just skated by everybody, and he was a support guy. But now he's going to be counted on to maybe pick up another 5 to 6 goals in total over the course of a season, and it's going to all come down to, and I don't know him other than watching him on TV. It's all going to come down to how he handles that bigger role, because he is going to have a bigger role. And he had a big role in Tampa Bay, but he'll have an extremely big role in the locker room and on the ice and in practice. Because I know that their coach, Dave Hakstol, does a great job. He'll demand good practice habits. So it all depends how he handles all that stuff. And he's a great pickup, and I thought he was a good pickup. But I just said, okay, that makes sense. But it all depends. And some guys can handle it when they go to a different organization and they want that bigger role. So time will tell how he handles it when he goes to Seattle.
That is why you are the expert. And I'm just the guy asking the questions. But to conclude the Seattle topic, do you think the Vegas magic carpet ride can be kind of replicated in the Pacific Northwest? Is it thinkable that Seattle might just go on to the Stanley Cup Finals?
No. I mean, now Ronnie Francis may not like me anymore after this podcast, and our wives are extremely tight. They're very, very tight. So I got to be careful. But no, I do not see, you know, I could be proven wrong, but I do not see Seattle doing what Las Vegas did. I just don't see it. I mean, Vegas, you talk about the perfect storm. They had everybody going. They built that team with skill and grit. I just don't see as much grit with Seattle right now. Maybe they pick it up over time. Who knows? But I don't see that happening. I do think they'll be competitive. I think they'll have a chance to get in the playoffs for sure. And I think if they can get into the playoffs, I think they got to look at that as being successful. But to go to the Stanley Cup Finals like Vegas did, I don't see it. I really don't.
And then again, stranger things have happened, and this is why we all love sports and hockey in particular. Coach, I got a lot of listeners' feedback and a lot of listeners' questions, and I want to tackle a couple of them as we progress in this episode and with this conversation. And one listener had probably the most interesting question of the offseason for me. He wanted to know how you would have dealt with the Kane's offer sheet for Jesperi Kotkaniemi if you were a Montreal GM, if you were Marc Bergevin. Was that the ultimate poison pill that the Hurricanes put out?
Yeah, I got to laugh because the Hurricanes said it wasn't any revenge from the Aho deal. Sure, it wasn't any revenge. If you believe that, I got a bunch of swampland in New York to sell you. But there is no doubt, and I don't care what Don Waddell says, that was definitely a revenge move. Maybe not by Donnie, but certainly by the owner. How I would have dealt with it, I guess there's a couple of things you got to look at. Where was your salary cap? Were you right up against it and you couldn't afford to match it? And you say, okay, let's just take the draft picks. The kid was pretty upset when Coach Ducharme scratched him from a couple of games in the playoffs. So now how disruptive was that in the locker room? Was there so much of an issue and so much dissension after that? Did you just have to cut them loose? So there's a lot of different variables. If you're up against the salary cap and you don't have any moves, then I guess you just got to take the draft picks. But I think a young kid like that, who's got some good skill, I would have tried everything to move out a couple of veteran guys or a couple of players who are coming at the end of their career, maybe give up a draft pick or two, to keep them and make room for them within the salary cap, because I think you got $6 million. You were going to have to, offer. You're going to have to honor the offer sheet. So I don't know. I don't think you ever want to give away or let a young kid walk out the door. But I guess we don't really know all the circumstances going on behind the scene. And unless you're a fly in the wall in there, you're never going to know what really happened. But I think most GMs would match it, and then you have X amount of time to get to the salary cap number and then try and move a couple of other players out and go that route. That's how I would have done it.
Not specifically targeting Jesperi Kotkaniemi, who's been up and down in his NHL career. He's just 21 years old still. He's the third overall draft pick from 2018. How many years do you give a prospect in the league, or how many years do you want to see him until you start to think about potentially moving on?
Yeah, I think a guy drafted that high and that skilled, and again, the beauty of analytics, the analytics will give you some of that picture. They'll know him inside and out character-wise from their coaches, being with him every single day of the week. I think you got to be patient. And, wait 3, 4, 5 years for a guy like that to break through. Because Sebastian Aho in Carolina, he didn't light the world on fire right out of the gate. And that's where Ronnie Francis is so good. He's extremely patient. You are never going to push him into a move that he doesn't want to make. And that's where a player like that, where if Montreal could have been a little more patient, why wouldn't you match that offer? So I think, but again, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes with the kid. Is he so disruptive in the locker room? They just wanted to move away from him. Did they look at the draft coming up where they have those draft picks now that they, we project this kid that we see potentially available. He'll be ready in a year or two. So there's a lot, but I don't think you can give up on a good, young, skilled guy, especially the way the game's going today. I don't know, 5 years for me would be the magic number.
But then again, if we look at it from Carolina's point of view, obviously having some revenge at the Montreal Canadiens' expense, but with Sebastian Aho, with Toivo Teravainen, and of course with Antti Raanta, three Finns on the Hurricanes. You think that, not problem with Jesperi Kotkaniemi, but you think it's gonna take care of itself, just having all those Finns on the roster already, who will talk to or get Kotkaniemi game ready or more ready than he was maybe in Montreal?
Yeah, no, I do, because I'll just use Sebastian Aho and Teravainen, especially Aho. He's grown up there. He's seen the good, the bad, and the ugly there. And now he's with Rod Brind'Amour, who's an amazing motivator, amazing, probably the best in the league, an incredible communicator. And if Rod wasn't there, if it was a different style coach, then, yeah, I think they might have some concerns. But not with Roddy. Roddy's as consistent as they come across the board, holds everybody accountable. He's not a screamer and a yeller. He's just very, very communicative. If he doesn't like what you're doing, he's going to sit you down in a very calm way, explain why he doesn't like it, and give you things to work on to change, or tell you this is the way we do it here. So, yeah, I think he'll fit in fine. And the fact that they have, you know, three Finns there, I don't think that's an issue. I mean, it's a global sport. You got to have players from whoever their best players are going to be on your roster. You know, God, Detroit had a lot of their roster was Swedish and they and Russians, and they did pretty good for themselves. So Roddy's a special person, has done an amazing job with that organization, has set a culture in that organization that everybody, and I mean everybody, is following. When you have guys like Vinny Trocheck coming out, and Vinny Trocheck's not a real coach-friendly type of player. I coached him in the minors. He's a good kid, but he'll buck you every inch of the way. And Vinny Trocheck came out and said this offseason that he'll run through the wall for Roddy Brind'Amour. I've never heard Vinny say that about any coach he's ever had, myself included. He maybe wanted to run through some of us coaches, but that speaks volumes from Roddy Brind'Amour.
Obviously, reigning Jack Adams Trophy winner Rod Brind'Amour, and interesting to see what's going to happen with Jesperi Kotkaniemi with the Carolina Hurricanes. Couple more listener questions that came in, and one interesting observation and interesting question attached to it. As we've seen these huge contracts for blue line defensemen or defensemen in general, like, who're going to play on your first pair probably with Seth Jones, with Dougie Hamilton, or the extensions to Kyle Makar and Hiskanen. Is that trend, I'd call it, going to continue, or is it just, or was this offseason just the exception to the rule?
Well, it'll continue for the elite defensemen like those guys. If you've got a defenseman like Makar, I'll use him as an example because I think he's going to be the best defenseman in the league very shortly, then, yeah, you're going to have to pay those guys. Dougie Hamilton, not so sure I would have paid that kind of money for him, but he is productive and he can run your power play. But when you have a young stud like Makar, like Jones, like Heskanen, yeah, you've got to pay those guys. But if you don't have that elite level, and I mean a guy that's going to be your number one defenseman, it's not even any question. He's going to be your number one defenseman for 10 years, 12 years. I think you do have to pay those guys because kind of like quarterbacks in the National Football League, they just don't come around too often. Not like that anyway. I mean, watching Makar in his first year, and I know his coach real well, his former college coach, Greg Carvel, really well. And I called Greg and I said, Greg, I said, man, oh man, this guy looks like he's been in the NHL for 10 years. He said, yeah. And he said, it's no mistake. He said, he doesn't get rattled. He said, he's only going to get better. And, he just said he is legit. And it's just amazing what that kid can do. So, yeah, you know, if you're going to back up the Brinks truck with all the money in it, then those are the types of guys who are going to get it.
And of course, Sid, Greg Carvel, graced this podcast as well.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
And of course, there is another Makar coming in. And guess who is playing for?
Yeah, UMass. Greg told me that. Maybe he's not like the brother, but he's still going to be pretty good, I bet.
Maybe, just maybe, this is the right point in time to remind listeners out there that there is a Taylor Makar probably not too far away from the start of his NHL career. But would you say the gold standard for NHL defensemen as of right now is Cale Makar?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You're not going to find many with that talent, because his talent is, oh, my God, it's amazing. You know, I don't want to get too crazy using comparisons, but he can skate like Bobby Orr. He sees the he sees the ice like Bobby Orr. I mean, he gets up and down the ice like nothing. I mean, he can be in the offensive end, deep into the offensive end, and then be back in the defensive zone and probably beat most guys back up ice.
Every time you're mentioned in the same breath as Bobby Orr, something special might be happening. And Cale Makar indeed is a special kind of talent. One last question as regards listeners having a say in this podcast and on this episode is an interesting one as well, because one of the listeners wanted to know why it is that restricted free agents like Rasmus Dahlin or Kaprizov, Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, or Brady Tkachuk were or are still hesitant to sign extensions. Is it an anomaly, or is it something bigger that's going on here?
What it is the agents understand that they've got leverage. And the agents just string it out. So when Rasmus Dahlin got signed finally, because that had been going on for quite a while, I use him as an example, and he's represented by Donnie Meehan, who's probably one of the best agents in the business, top five anyway. And I dealt with that agency when I was in Florida. They like to drag things out as far as they can take it, and that's what goes on, and that's their job. That's what they should be doing. You know, if you and I have got a son in the National Hockey League like Dahlin, you're damn right you're going to want him to get as much money as possible, and that's what a good agent does. So I think that's what it is the agents are dragging this out to as far as they possibly can go and squeeze out as much money as they possibly can without giving up a lot of years. And I think that's personally, and dealing with these agents, and most of them are really good guys, regardless of what you hear about them. But that's their job. And that's what I think is going on with Tkachuk, with Dahlin, all these guys. It's not that they don't want to go back to their team. And I know a lot of people probably said, well, maybe Dahlin doesn't want to be in Buffalo. He definitely wants to be in Buffalo. Dahlin, Cousins, Mittelstadt, all those young guys, that's what they're building the team around now. And, and it's been very public, so I'm not saying anything that I shouldn't be, but Jack Eichel, is not, he's not the leader of that club anymore. It's all those young guns, and they're going to try and build around those young guns and have a successful team. Because if Buffalo gets back on the map and gets into the playoffs, my God, there's not going to be a tougher building to play in than Buffalo. It's a brutal place to go play when they're flying around there.
We'll talk about a couple of things that you already mentioned a little later on this episode. But as you are, at the very least, that's my impression, one of the most composed coaches and GMs that I know. How hard is it to keep one's composure when you're negotiating with agents and negotiations are going on and dragging on and dragging on and going on? Is it easy, or is it too easy to lose one's cool, or am I mistaken right here?
No. I mean, I'll be honest with you, and I'm not always the most composed guy in the world, but when I was a GM and we were negotiating, Alexander Barkov is probably the best example I can give you. Todd Diamond was his agent, him and Mark Gandler, the agents for Alexander Barkov. That was a long drawn out process. But I can honestly tell you, it never got tense. Obviously we knew we wanted Alexander back, and we knew we were going to have to pay money to get him back on a long-term deal. But it was very professional. A lot of give and take back and forth. Now, they were smart. They signed him right up until, I think he's got two more years left on that contract. And I said to the ownership group, I said, listen, what they're going to do is they're going to bring it right up to free agency when he's going to not even be 30. And I said, then there's going to be a major league bidding war for him. And when he becomes a free agent, I wouldn't be a bit surprised that he, unless they're winning Stanley Cups in Florida, which they could be at that point, and he says his agent, no, I don't want to go anywhere but Florida, you could potentially see another John Tavares bidding war going on. So you just got to remain calm and patient, which I'm not always known for doing. But when I was in the box watching games from a GM's perspective, I never got upset. I just kind of watched it and stayed really calm. On the bench as a coach, it's a little different sometimes. You're flipping out inside internally. I would say outwardly, I was more emotional in the American Hockey League. And then as you mellow and you get older, you kind of calm down a little bit. But no, it's just, going in when you're dealing with these agents, they're going to try and get under your skin, and they always have a higher value than what the player's worth, or most of the time. And then we always want to get it obviously a little bit less on the management side, but it's the business, and you gotta be cool about it.
Did a very good job of hiding your more heated, outgoing side in Austria.
Yeah, obviously. Ask my wife how calm I get.
We'll do at some point. Coach, 45 minutes down of talking about the National Hockey League, obviously 100 different topics that we could tackle, but two very hot ones for Austrian fans coming up. Right after a break, we're going to talk about the Dallas Stars, about the Minnesota Wild, the two teams where we hope to have Austrians on a squad. All of that and more upcoming after this break.
Du hörst und schätzt Hockey O'Clock mit Martin Pfanner und bist noch dazu Unternehmerin oder Unternehmer? Dir ist es wichtig, in einem Eishockey-Umfeld deine Inhalte punktgenau an den Mann oder die Frau zu bringen? Dann sind die vielfältigen und maßgeschneiderten Werbemöglichkeiten bei Hockey O'Clock vielleicht genau das Richtige für dich und deine Marke. Alle Infos zu Werbeformen und Sonderwerbeformen, Buchung oder Preisen gerne auf Anfrage an hockeyoclock101@gmail.com. Das ist Hockey O'Clock. 101@gmail.com.
Back on Hockey O'Clock, back with Austria's favorite National Hockey League pundit. It's none other than still coach and GM Tom Rowe, formerly of the Florida Panthers. Coach, on the first part of the episode, we were talking about the bigger storylines, about broader things. Now I want to get down to the nitty-gritty and talking about two specific teams where we hope that Austrians will be playing this year. Obviously, the Minnesota Wild with Marco Rossi, and of course, the Dallas Stars now with Michael Ruffo. I want to start with the Minnesota Wild, who are coming off a playoff campaign, who lost very narrowly against the Vegas Golden Knights. How would you assess the past Wild campaign? Success that came too early to a rebuilding squad?
No, I don't think it came too early. I thought Billy Guerin did a great job of making some changes there, moving players out. I thought it took a lot of courage to do what he did with Parisi and Suter. That's not easy, but he had a change of chemistry. They were leaning too much on those two guys. And I thought Dean Evason, who I was happy to see get the job full time there, because he certainly paid his dues as an assistant in the National Hockey League and the head coach in the American Hockey League. No, I don't think they overachieve probably a little bit. But now I think what Guerin and Evason wanted to do is set expectations higher and send the message to the organization throughout the players' room at the minor league level and the National Hockey League level, and to the fans, that we're here to win a Stanley Cup and that we do have a certain standard that we want to meet. And I thought that's what was so good for them last year. They were able to accomplish that. For them to do what they did during the regular season and then to play as well as they did in the playoffs, I think to a man, they'd probably say, yeah, they didn't see that coming. But give Guerin credit and give Evason credit for leading the way. And they're both high-end character guys when they played. And that's the way they want their team to play. And the fact that, and I absolutely love this, when Evason had the courage to scratch Parisi, I thought that was an unbelievable message to send everybody. And good for Dean for doing that, because I think that that was probably one of the most important decisions he could have made as a coach in his first year. And it's not easy, you know, and I'm sure, you know, there was a lot of disgruntled conversations going on behind the scenes. But when things aren't going and your big guns aren't producing, you know, you got to send a message one way or another. And Dean had the courage to do it, and good for Billy Guerin for backing him up on it.
Now, if we talk about floor and ceiling, the floor after a playoff campaign probably needs to be another playoff run or playoff qualification again. But what's the ceiling for the Minnesota Wild as it stands right now?
I think get out of the first round. And I think, again, if they ever get out of the second round, say you go to the conference finals, that would be amazing. But, each year make some progression, because what you're going to want to do, and I'm sure they're going to want to be doing this, is they're going to want to get Marco Rossi into the lineup this year. Now, he's coming off a tough season last year with COVID and everything that he went through. But I remember, because I used to have his agent, Pat Poloni, and Pat used to tell me how good he was. And I started watching, when I was in Lens, I would watch his games on video when he was playing in Ottawa. And I'm saying, oh my God, I said, this kid's got eyes in the back of his head. And that's what we talked earlier. That's what I get excited about. You know, I can't wait to watch Minnesota play now if he's in the lineup, because I just want to see what he can do against the National Hockey League defenseman and against National Hockey League teams. And because he is a talent, and I do think he's going to be unbelievable. So I do think they're going to have another good year. And again, I'll go back to the standard that's been met there, and the fact that they bought out those two huge contracts. I think that breathes, and it's not a knock on the two players that got bought out. It just breathes a little bit of life into that organization. And now guys who maybe weren't getting big minutes on the back end are going to start getting more minutes because Suter's gone. The same thing with Parisi. Parisi's gone. So now other younger forwards are going to get more minutes. And that's what will be exciting to watch. But I think if they get into the second round, regardless if they win the second round, I think, again, you're making some you're making baby steps going forward, but you're making them in the right direction.
One of the bigger headlines of this offseason was obviously the contract status of the reigning Calder Memorial Trophy winner, Kirill Kaprizov. And obviously they came to terms. He signed a big extension the other day. Is Kaprizov's contract extension after just, quote unquote, one good year in a National Hockey League a good deal, or is it buyer's beware?
I think it's a good deal because he played at a very high level in Russia, right? I mean, it's not like he is a total unknown. He's a little bit older. I think he's 25, if I'm not mistaken. 24, okay. So it's not like if you're a 19, 20-year-old getting $9 million, unless you're Austin Matthews, then yeah, buyer beware. But, you saw him play last year. I mean, I couldn't believe what he did. I mean, he made plays that were amazing. So, yeah, at 25 years old, you got to step up, and that's probably a huge reason why they bought out the two contracts that they bought out, because they wanted to have money without strapping themselves financially for this young kid. And knowing that they got Rossi coming right behind, now Rossi, they won't have to do that kind of contract with him if he has the same success for a few more years, but they're eventually going to have to do it if he is successful as everybody's hoping he will be. But no, I don't think it's buyer beware. I thought it was, we were talking about it on the golf course, a couple of my buddies. And I mean, you got to remember, I'm in South Carolina with a bunch of rednecks. And then a couple of them have turned into pretty good hockey fans. And the fact that they're Trump supporters, I won't hold against them. But they even asked me, they said, $9 million for a rookie? And I said, yeah, but he's not a normal rookie. He's 24, 25 years old. So I said, he's a great player that they're going to have. They will build their team around, and they already are building that team around him.
Would it be okay next time around to just provide you with some kind of recording device and you recording the conversations that go on the golf course and putting them on a pod would it get some kind of rating?
Yeah, it would get some kind of rating because Trump names comes up a lot. And I'm not a Trump supporter. They all are. You got to remember, I live in the South where Trump is gold.
We're not going to dive into politics right here.
God.
I want to remain with the Wild a little bit. If you look at their roster right now, what's their biggest strength and where do you think there are still holes that could be or have to be plucked maybe at the trade deadline?
Yeah, I still think they could use a couple more defensemen, you know, a couple of guys in the 5-6 spot, you know, might be a little bit thin there. I wouldn't say they're drastically thin there, but a little bit. I like what they got up front, but again, yet a little, it's always easier to fill the third and fourth line roles because you can go out and get those guys through free agency. You've got to be able to draft your first, second line guys, and then they got to be able to move in and produce pretty quick. You know, Greenway's done a great job there. They got Rossi coming in. I'm sure they're hoping like heck he steps in and has an impact. But again, I think you shore up the third and fourth line because those are that's the easier part of the roster to make better quicker. And then just hope your development people and your coaching staff are bringing those top end young kids along as quickly as possible. And just, you got to let those guys go play and they're going to make their mistakes and there are going to be some nights they lose the game for you. But by Christmas time, usually if the job's been done properly and Dean Evason's a great developer of young guys, you know, usually by Christmas, you start seeing teams take off. So yeah, I would say they probably need to shore up third and fourth line a little bit and their fifth and sixth defenseman.
Now, Rossi is currently with the rookies. He made an impact already with the AHL's Iowa Wild in preseason. And knowing that he's one of the more interesting center prospects the Wild have had in quite some time, you know you've got a potential generational talent at your hand. You know he's coming off a tough season where COVID really, really struck him. And where COVID potentially set him back. How careful would you personally be with inserting him into your lineup? And if so, where would you start putting him?
I'd be real careful, and I'd probably start him in the American Hockey League because if you move him in too quick, let's just say they don't get off to a great start. And players are cranky, coaches are cranky. It's not a good environment in the locker room. Fans are upset, bad media. Say Marco comes in and doesn't get out of the gate real quick. You know, they don't care that he's only a 20-year-old kid. There's going to be criticism there in the media. So why put him through that? Let him go down to Iowa where nobody's going to know anything about him. You know, he's not going to get a ton of media attention. He can develop under a real good coach. Timmy Army's the head coach down there with a lot of experience. Great guy, really good with young kids. And let him go down there. Let him go down there for a month, month and a half. And when things are positive, if Minnesota's gotten off to a real good start, everybody's happy, the locker room's positive, then yeah, bring him up and let's see what he can do. Put him in. But when you bring him up, you can't put him on the fourth line. When you bring him up, he's got to go into a top six, well, at least top nine role. He's got to be at least on the third line where he's getting some good minutes and creating some offense. Because the biggest thing to worry about is if you're in a locker room with some disgruntled players and they're miserable and pissed off about whatever, that can drag down a young kid, and it's tough enough for young kids to crack into the National Hockey League. And you need to make sure, and this is what Guerin and Evason are doing. They're surrounding these players with good veteran guys. Like they've got some real quality veteran guys there. So I'm sure it's going to be a positive atmosphere there. Tampa Bay, I read an article yesterday about Tampa Bay. The veteran players on that team are going out of their way to make all the young kids coming into training camp feel comfortable and wanted. And that's huge. And too many times those young kids don't get treated properly, or they don't aren't given the time of day. And that's the trouble you run into. So Marco's going to be in the NHL, no doubt about it. But I wouldn't rush him. You got to be patient. And it's easier said than done sometimes.
Just wanted to ask, if you were a betting man, Marco Rossi on the opening day roster, yes or no?
No.
Well, we're going to find out if he's going to be on the opening day roster. I think it's going to be on Friday against the Anaheim Ducks. Another interesting topic, Coach, that we haven't tackled yet with the Minnesota Wild is that they're going to be participating in the new Discover Winter Classic of the National Hockey League. Do you think it's an advantage having something to be looking forward to during the regular season, or is it going to be a distraction?
No, I think it's awesome that, you know, the league's doing that. And I think the players absolutely love being involved in that game. I know if I was a player, I'd really want to be in a game like that. And it just gives you something to look forward to. And there are some days that are, man, oh, man, and these guys are getting paid a lot of money, but a lot of times money never even comes into the equation when it comes to playing the game. They just want to be successful and win and be in the playoffs. But there are some days where you beat up and you're sore and, you know, and it can be a grind. But if you have that to look forward to, the National Hockey League's done an amazing job promoting that particular series of games. Yeah, I mean, it gives the players something to look forward to. I don't think it's a distraction. If anything, I think it's a huge help, huge boost.
Going to take place on January the 1st, as always, and it's also going to take place on Pulse 24, not only hopefully with Marco Rossi, but also with the former St. Louis Blues goalkeeper, Reinhard Divis, who's now an expert on the Pulse 24 team. And of course, the St. Louis Blues are going to be the Minnesota Wild's opponent. So a lot to be looking forward to. Another club, Coach, I wanted to talk to you about are obviously the Dallas Stars, where we don't know yet when and where Marco Rossi will make his debut as a Wild. We're fairly confident that Michael Raffo will make his debut for the Dallas Stars on opening day. And as we talk about the Stars, we are probably talking about one of the bigger disappointments of the past campaign, as they just made the Stanley Cup Finals the year prior. Is Dallas the team with the biggest or maybe among the biggest bounce back potential teams?
Yeah, I mean, they're a funny team because you never know quite what you're going to get sometimes. I mean, they got Pavelski, they got Ben. They've got a lot of good players, but they're definitely a think defense first type of team. And I think if you just kind of let them run and gun a little bit, you know, you're still going to have enough defense in your game to win. So it'll be interesting to see how these new signings that they've made, Raffle being more of a defensive grinding type of a forward. You know, they went out and got Glenn Denning, who again is another checker type guy. You know, they're going to be very strong down the middle with the guys they have playing center. Yeah, I mean, they could bounce back, or they could stay fairly flat. You just don't know. It's Jimmy Nill's a great executive, does a real good job. Rick Bonus, I know the guys love playing for him. So the chemistry will be there. It just depends on Pavelski and Ben and how those players perform. They get Heskinen on the back end, so they're very mobile. You know, they've got the horses. Just depends on how they all put it together and how they come out of the gates.
Now, coming off a Stanley Cup final campaign and then missing the playoffs, and obviously they had a year from hell with a lot of players haven't been in COVID quarantine when the season started. Did it surprise you that they held on to Rick Bowness?
Well, I think that they held on to him because of the relationship he has with the players. And then today's game, you got to get the players to play for you. And Rick's really good at it. Rick's very similar to Gerard Gallant, very similar type of coach, similar type of player when they both played. So, yeah, I, as a former coach and a guy waiting for the next gig, I was happy that Jimmy Neal held on to Rick. Rick and I know Rick because we played against each other. He's a great guy, real quality person. And players will run through the wall for him. Now, he's been a head coach of the National Hockey League before. He's been an assistant coach for a long time. So he knows what the drill is. But I wouldn't be a bit surprised. He'll probably lean on some guys a little harder this year, knowing that they've got to get back into the playoff picture. But no, I thought it was a real good decision. Jimmy Neal knows what he's got there, and the players like him. And at the end of the day, if you don't get the players to play for you, forget it. You're not going to last long.
We were talking about the Wild's floor and ceiling. Where do you think Dallas's floor and ceiling are?
Playoff team for sure. Conference finals. I think they got enough to get to the conference finals. What they do after that is going to depend on their goaltending.
And interestingly enough, you of course brought up the goaltending just as I was about to ask you about it. There's Bishop, there's Holpe, there's Kudobin, there's Ottinger. Who's going to be number one in your estimation?
Wow. Well, Holpe's won a cup. He's probably tired of getting kicked around. I would put my money on him. Now, whether he can keep it all year remains to be seen. But I think the system that Dallas plays is going to benefit him, and he'll know exactly where all the shots are coming from on a regular basis. And I do still think he's a good goaltender, regardless of what's happened. Vancouver was a tough year for him and everybody else. But no, I'd put my money on Holpe.
If you take a look at the roster, top to bottom, what's the biggest strength going to be for the Dallas Stars in the upcoming campaign?
For me, their back end. You know, I think they got some pretty good defensemen back there. Heiskanen lugs it on a regular basis, logs a lot of minutes. So, yeah, and again, you've got a system in place that's defense first there. So I do think that's where their strength is going to be. And if Holpe can reform, get his form back to where it used to be, then you'll have a real tough team to play against. Because when they're playing and they're on their game, there's not a lot of ice out there to be had. And they, especially when their forwards are tracking back into the defensive zone, helping the defense, you have very little time to make a play.
Now, for Austrian viewers and listeners, obviously of importance is that Michael Raffel is now a member of the Dallas Stars. If you look at his career trajectory, what he's done, where he helped out, how many different roles he played, like centerman, wing, played on a first line, played on a second line, played on a fourth line, which was basically his daily bread last year. Where do you figure he's going to play in Dallas?
I think he'll probably be with Glenn Denning. It'll be because they're going to want to use four lines a lot. But he'll be a guy that they can move up to a top six role because he's so smart and he competes and he's not afraid to use his body. But I would think if everybody's healthy and given what they've got, I would say no more than third line, but he might even end up on the fourth line just to solidify that fourth line so you can just send four lines out. But if they shorten the bench and they've got to only go with three lines, I definitely could see Rick Bowness moving him up into a line role. That's the beauty of him. You can basically play him in you want in the lineup. And like I told you last year when I was in Florida, we tried to get him in a trade a few times and Philly would just never trade him. But he's a heck of a player. I know guys like him a lot. And he's a mucker and a grinder, and he competes. And he's definitely a guy you can win a Stanley Cup with for sure.
Now, as we tackled the two teams where Austrians hopefully are going to play in 21-22, we're going to turn our attention to a rapid-fire round of you picking a couple of the most important awards in the National Hockey League. And because of you already raving about Cale Makar, is it a given that he's going to win a Norris Trophy?
I think so. I think he could have, you know, there was some discussion about him last year. But yeah, I would definitely put him right at the top of my list.
Your pick for the President's Trophy in this upcoming season, which annually goes to the team with the most points after the regular season.
Wow. That's, I'll go with Colorado again. Because I think they learned a lot last year, and they got a coach that's won a championship at every single level, East Coast Hockey League, American Hockey League, and he is a heck of a coach. But no matter how good he is as a coach, he's got some unbelievable players with McKinnon and Makar, just to mention two guys off the top. But I'll go President's Trophy with Colorado, and I also got him as Stanley Cup winner.
And I know it's probably not fair putting you on a spot knowing that it's an 82-game season, that it's, of course, a marathon, not a sprint, and that so many things could happen. But it's always fun to project and then at the season's end to go back to some of the projections and see how they fared, how they turned out. And of course, you being the expert, I expect nothing less than them being spot on, like all of them.
yeah, right.
2021-2022 Hart Memorial Trophy winner, which annually goes to the league's most valuable player.
I think Toronto is taking so much abuse, and rightfully so, because they haven't lived up to their expectations, but they still have an amazing team. I'll go with Austin Matthews, because I think he's getting to the point where he's tired of hearing all the critics about him in the playoffs. And even though that's based on the regular season, I think he's coming in with a real agenda. And I think he's going to be extremely determined this year. And I think he's grown up quite a bit over the last few years. And I think he's going to be a Hart Trophy winner this season.
Going from the forwards to the Barry back, it is the Vezina Trophy, which annually goes to the league's best goaltender. Who you think that's going to be in 2021-2022?
Yeah, even though I didn't agree with how Kucherov handled himself after they won the Stanley Cup last year, his post-game comments, I do agree with him that Vasilevsky, I think, is a Vezina Trophy winner for sure. So he's an amazing goalie. He's big. He's flexible as anybody in the game and just comes up with big save after big save. So I think if John Cooper didn't have Vasilevsky in net, John Cooper would probably have a lot of sleepless nights. But with him in net, he probably sleeps real comfortable.
And maybe even a new job. Who knows? Call yeah. A Memorial Trophy for the best rookie in the National Hockey League.
Yeah. Well, I got two guys, and I mentioned Rossi last year. But again, you know, he's going to need to get his game back into shape. But I still have him on the list. But Cole Caulfield in Montreal, I think, you know, with what he did in the playoffs, just stepping right in the way he did and knowing the league a little bit better, I'm going to go with him. And you know, I do think he's a game breaker, and he can certainly put the wins up in the column for you because he can finish and I think he likes that pressure a lot. So I'll go with Caulfield as a Calder Trophy winner.
My favorite award of them all, and for some people's tastes, they're probably one or two too many, but I like the Selke Trophy, which annually goes to the best defensive forward in the National Hockey League. And the reigning Selke Trophy recipient is none other than Alexander Barkov, whom you coached as well. Is he going to be the favorite for another Selke, or is there someone else on your radar?
No, I think it was good that he won it, because I know last year I picked Foligno, because you look at all the analytics and all the numbers. Foligno did a great job in Minnesota. But Barkov is probably going to be the next Patrice Bergeron, can do everything. And Patrice Bergeron had a pretty good run with that. So I think Alex can definitely win it again, and could win it and will win it multiple times before his career is over. I mean, it's just, I just love the guy. He's so professional, and he's just so good of a hockey player. And if he was in New York media market, not down in Florida where nobody really gets any attention, you know, this guy would be in every single newspaper article written about hockey in New York. So, you know, I do think that Barkov will win it again.
Just to double check, because you said Rod Brind'Amour is going to be one of the favorites, if not the favorite, to win Coach of the Year. Is he going to double down on the Jack Adams trophy that he's already owning?
I had three guys, Adams for the Adams trophy, Cooper, Brind'Amour, and Gallant. Gerard always has good history in the first year with the club, but I am going with Brind'Amour here, because I think Brod will probably do the best job that he's had since he started coaching Carolina this year, because Hamilton's gone. I think that's going to get his juices going again, because I'll guarantee you he's been planning every night and day in the office with his coaching staff, you know, how are we going to take the next step with this group, because he's got some new guys in there, right? And I'm just telling you, I know Roddy, and I know him really well from when I coached there when he was still a player. This guy's a special guy, and I think he'll get him over the top, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they're in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Speaking about getting them over the top, you already named your Stanley Cup champion, prospective one, with the Colorado Avalanche. And as we're going back to the conferences system, Colorado coming out of the Western Conference, is it Carolina that's coming out of the Eastern Conference, or is there someone else you're having on your radar right now?
No, I mean, in the East, there's so much parity. I mean, there's parity all over the National Hockey League, but I think in the East a little bit more, just because there's so many teams that can beat you any night. Bruce Cassidy's done a phenomenal job in Boston. And, you know, I've got it either between Boston and Carolina. I mean, I think Bruce is a tremendous coach. The standard with that organization is so high. I mean, every year they go in expecting to win the Stanley Cup. And when you got a guy like Patrice Bergeron in your locker room, who everybody adores there, you know, he'll make sure that everybody's pulling their weight. And I don't care what kind of roster they've got, they all play the same way. It's unbelievable. And I'll tell you a quick little story, because I know you probably got to go here. But when Todd Hall first went to Boston, they're big in finishing every single drill, which is the way you should do it in practice. And Todd Hall took a little bit of a shortcut, and then Bruce Cassidy skated up to him and he said, "That's not the way we do it here." He said, "We finish every single drill." And that came from Todd Hall. So that's the standard that they've set there. And that goes from one coach to the next coach. It's not just, you know, and Bruce's phenomenal job, but he went in there and that standard was already set. So they expect to win the cup every year, and they've got the horses, I think, to do it. And they just grind you to death in that building. And when you got a pain in the neck like Marchand running around, getting under everybody's skin all the time, that's the X factor for that club. So I've got either Boston or Carolina going to the finals.
Great stuff. And just to make sure I'm not going anywhere, when you want to tell stories, tell them all night long. You be my guest.
Okay.
But there's a thing that we need to turn our attention to. Obviously, this conversation is coming out 6 days from now as we're recording it on Wednesday, September 29th. There's still a week to go then until the start of the National Hockey League season. So a lot can happen in between now and then, obviously. But as October 16th is nearing, and as it brings the first live game of our hockey coverage on Pulse 24, it's going to be an interesting one, I have to say, when I saw the schedule when it came out. It's going to be the Arizona Coyotes against the Buffalo Sabres. Probably not some of the contending teams, but interesting campaigns that those two teams have ahead of themselves. For all the people who think, okay, Buffalo and Arizona probably doesn't rock my hockey world, give listeners a reason to watch those two teams play on Austrian national TV.
Well, for Buffalo, you're going to see good young players. Paterka, for one, who played in the Ice Hockey League in Salzburg last year. I would think he's going to make the starting roster. Now, whether he stays in Buffalo the whole year, I'm not sure. But you know, I would be surprised if he didn't at least start the season there. They've got a lot of good young players. Donnie Granato, their head coach, wants their D joining the rush all the time and pressuring the puck in all three zones. So they are going to be an extremely hardworking team, and they'll be an exciting team to watch creatively, and they'll create offense, and they will be buzzing. So that would be the reason to watch Buffalo. The reason to watch Arizona, they've got a new coach in there, Coach Derigny, who is by far probably one of the best up-and-coming coaches in the National Hockey League. He's a no BS type of guy. He wants his guys competing physically two ways, both ends of the ice. So you're going to see one team in Buffalo really pushing the pace in a huge way, maybe not as physical as Arizona, and you'll see Arizona pushing the pace, but they'll be stopping on every loose puck. They'll be driving the net hard. They'll be finishing every single check. They'll make life miserable for the opponent. So you'll have two different contrasting styles. One in Buffalo that's very, very high-end pressure. And Arizona will be high-end pressure, but they'll be more physical. So that'll be – that could – and I know it's – not the highlight game that everybody would want to watch. You know, they're not Stanley Cup contenders, but it could be an incredibly fast-paced game for Austrians to watch. I think it could be a lot of fun.
You know that you've got a second career in advertisement if you ever intend to do so or to go there.
We'll see.
One last thing, and that's something that a lot of people or people just can't know as we don't have insights into the organization, but as opening day is 13 days away from the point of this conversation and the recording of it, do you think the Jack Eichel situation will be resolved by then?
Only if they get value back. They're not going to give them away. I know they've been working long and hard on it, and they've been fairly public about it. I thought it was a real courageous move by Kevin Adams to do what he did, took the captaincy away from him, which he should have. I thought that was awesome. And the fact that they're trying to move him, I think, is terrific, because it comes down to culture and it comes down to 23 guys on the roster, not just one. And Jack Eichel's a great player, no doubt about it. But if he's not going to buy in to what they're doing there, then you got to move on.
What's fair value?
I think you got to get two roster players minimum, maybe three. And you got to get a first or a second round pick. You've got to get two players that go right into your starting roster. And then you've got to get a couple of prospects, or you got to get a legit prospect to put in Rochester that can make it in a year, and a couple of draft picks. I know the price there. I don't know specifically what the price is. I know everybody's saying, well, it's too high, it's too high, it's too high. Oh, yeah. You know, any other GM would be putting it up there too. But high marks to Kevin Adams, high marks to Jason Karmanos and the ownership group there for doing what they're doing. And I do think they'll get it done, but Kevin's been incredibly smart about it, I think.
Going to be definitely interesting, going to be a talking point once we hit the NHL season with Pulse 24. And Coach, obviously there are so many different topics that we could still be talking about, but I heard there are hockey conversations to be held on a golf course, so I need to let you go. So much appreciated that you're taking such extensive time with the Hockey O'Clock podcast. Glad to be talking to you. Looking forward to talking to you again sometime down the road.
Sounds good, Martin. Tell Dave Barr, hang in there in Vienna. Good man. Tell him I said hello.
Will do. Thank you so much.
Hockey. davon.